Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, August 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to help me turn any negative emotional experience into part of that infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have either been stepped through that worksheet process or they've called to give testimonials about how the active application of that tool in their lives has benefited them. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it tends to prompt comments or questions, and that always makes our time together on Mind Shifters Radio more immediately relevant and useful. And if you have comments or questions, give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll be able to announce you by your area code and have a conversation. Alternatively, if you're listening to this in the archives and you've got a question or a comment, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. And you can email me at T-J-H at mindshifters-academy.org. If we receive those emails, we will do our best to address their comments or questions or answers, and then you'll be able to listen to it through the archives. Today is the 232nd day of the year, and we're doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. So today's lesson reads, Be in my mind, my Creator, through the day. Commentary reads, Be in my mind, my Creator, when I awake, and shine upon me throughout the day today. Let every minute be a time that I dwell with you. Let me not forget my hourly thanksgiving, that you have remained with me and always will be there to hear my call to you and answer me. As evening comes, let my thoughts be still of you and your love, and let me sleep sure of my safety, certain of your care, and happily aware that I am your offspring. This is as every day should be. Today, I will practice the end of fear. Today, I will have faith in the Creator, who is my source. I will trust all things to the Creator. I will let the Creator reveal all things to me and to you and to be undismayed because we are the Creator's offspring. And we've also committed to do the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment lessons this year. And her lesson 232 is titled, Interrupting My Mind with This Important Weather Alert. She quotes E.B. White as saying, all that I ever hope to say is that I love the world. Pam writes, sea otters, when they sleep, hold hands. It keeps them from drifting apart, getting lost, losing their tribe. That's how I envision us as Course in Miracles students, doing these lessons together. We're all here holding hands until we wake back up and realize we could never drift apart or get lost or lose anything. The only reason we think we've drifted or that we're lost is because of our grievances. Lesson 232, Pam paraphrases it as, be in my mind, yo dude, throughout the day. This lesson is yet another attempt to get us to go toward the light. Our brilliance, our unending luminosity, is temporarily obscured by our complaints, by our loudmouth thoughts that like to pretend that something is wrong. Today, I am encouraged to release my mind's regular programming and rejoice in a higher truth. And every time the old programming tries to run its commercial message saying, something's missing, you're not okay, you've got to strive harder, I'm just going to lay back, relax, and grab my fellow otter's hands. Be in my mind, dear Creator, throughout the day today. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson. And the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment reading for today. And we have about 50 minutes to connect, to be of service, to answer your comments or your questions. 563-999-3581. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? Today's a Friday. That means last night we had a Mindshifter support group. And we had three people plus myself in the group. And we ran the full time. We didn't have any disruptions or power outages from storms. And we discussed things that had been on the internet show. We discussed people's anxieties about various relationship issues in their life and how to use the tools, various tools, including Diedrich Wolsack's six-step forgiveness process. And we looked at the extraordinary similarity between the reality management worksheet, which in its current version, Dr. Michael Rice puts out the most recent version, has seven steps to it, and Diedrich Wolsack's Choose Again forgiveness process, which has six steps to it. And the similarity, the synchronicity, the near identical understanding is amazing, unless you realize that both of these people, Dr. Michael Rice and Diedrich Wolsack, used the Course in Miracles as their at least one of their primary source material resources. So it is completely understandable that the focus is on your true nature as love for both of these. It's completely understandable that the awareness is that any negative emotional state I experience is created inside me. It's not being caused by the people or things outside of me. And it's completely understandable that both of these tools recognize that forgiveness is completely 100% an inside job. When I forgive, I'm only doing an action inside my own mind-body energy system, inside my false belief system. I am dismantling the false beliefs. I am pardoning myself for doing one action or another, but the forgiveness process means dismantling a false perception or false belief. And both of these tools recognize that, as does the work in the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery. So, how can we support you today? What's on your mind? We've got about 46 or 47 minutes left. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. And we can talk about whatever's on your mind, whatever has been a topic in the past 10-plus years on the Mind Shifters radio show, which they now call a podcast, and or anything that's come up in any of the support groups that you might have led or participated in, or anything that you might have experienced when you were at one of the intensives that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice have been running for a long, long time now. And when I was in a session this morning, I've had a couple sessions this morning, there's so much to talk about. Well, one of them is the idea of when I'm reacting from any kind of an upset, I am reacting while there's blinders on me, while I am looking through a glass darkly, as the ancient scriptures would say, or when I'm convinced that I'm right and clearly my perception is distorted in an unhealthy way. And we know this instantly from the feedback system. Any negative emotion that I experience is far more usefully interpreted by me as an indication that my perception has been distorted, that there's an error in terms of my internal thought process, and that is far more beneficial than what my culture teaches me, which says the problem's outside of me. And so with that in mind, when I acknowledge the upset and then I decide to think or speak before I've dismantled the upset, that is as unproductive as charging ahead down a street with a blindfold on when I know there are open manholes somewhere in the street. It is just not useful for me to speak or act from upset without at least acknowledging that my perception is distorted. And probably far more beneficial to me is to understand that this situation, if I've been triggered to a negative emotional state, this situation is way too important for me to ignore and or to panic about. So rather than acting from the panic or the negative emotion or the upset and the distorted image that my perception has created from that, it's far more beneficial for me to take a time out, back up, at least do some calming breathing. And probably far more beneficial is to step into the use of a tool that helps me identify what I'm doing with my mind, with my thoughts, with my beliefs, and see clearly how that's creating the negative emotion I'm experiencing. It's not being caused by the outside world. And then step into canceling my need to be right. This is one of the biggest challenges for most of us raised in the Western world. Yeah, but. I had a session with someone yesterday, and it was actually, I've had three of them so far this week, where this theme comes up where people say, and I get it because it's we're trained into it from our politicians and from our media and from so many shows, and somebody starts talking about a problem area, let's say at a business, and somebody identifies that there's a thing that's happening that's unproductive in, let's say, the shipping department. And then instead of addressing that, someone from the shipping department says, yeah, but you guys in sales, blah, blah, blah. That's the yeah, but approach. That's the misdirection. That's a move that we're trained to do, which is going to guarantee that nothing gets resolved. I cannot shift the focus and move into the blame game and expect that I'm going to get resolution on any problem that is up, that's, you know, activated in my life. Okay, so wait a minute. You know, you just backed your car over my $4,000 of landscaping. And the person who backs the car over the landscaping gets out and says, well, yeah, well, you're not a perfect driver either. Remember that time when you were in high school and you... So it's a misdirection. It's a distraction. It's a blame game. And it cannot lead to the productive or constructive resolution to a problem. So in my bottom line observations, that's the observation number two, that blame is a luxury item. That while I've seen kindergarten age children who are expert at blaming, I have never seen blame lead to the productive or constructive resolution to a problem. So I have my internal personal radar going anywhere in my life, but especially if I'm in a therapy session, and the radar will go off any time I become aware that somebody's blaming themselves or somebody else or for the circumstances in their life for something they don't like. And when that radar goes off for myself or for somebody else, I call a timeout and I point out the fact that this is a completely unproductive use of my energy. I've never seen blame lead to the productive or constructive resolution to a problem. As such, it's really important for me, if I have any hope of finding a resolution to my current situation, it's really important that I call a timeout and choose to at least the blaming, at least cancel my need to be right about who is to blame, and pull my conscious awareness away from that set of conclusions. Because as long as I hold on to those conclusions, as long as I pour my mental energy into that goal that somebody, some person, some thing, some situation, or myself is different than what they actually are in that moment, as long as I'm in that space, the distorted perception will persist. It'll worsen, it'll intensify, and it'll persist. And that is detrimental. Not only can it not be helpful, it is every time detrimental. And so for me to be able to open the space for something more productive, I have to stop doing what I'm already doing that I know isn't productive. So first step, first useful tool for is for me to build my, strengthen my practice, build the awareness that I can do this, and then strengthen my ability to step back and observe my emotional state moment to moment, have at least some part of my mental emotional energy always tuned into how am I feeling. And then at the earliest warning signs that my feeling is triggered to a negative experience, I call a timeout and I use whatever tools, whether it's the breath or the EFT tapping or the goal canceling from Michael Rice or the choose again forgiveness worksheet from Diedrich Wolsack or the Byron Katie questions or the Sedona release method questions. I use a set of tools to dismantle the internal mental emotional process that is creating the negative emotion that I say I don't want to feel. And if I can't do that, then I can't get a decent image, picture, replica of what's going on in the world around me, and so I can't work toward resolution. Everything I do that comes from the picture my mind is showing me when there's a negative emotional state active in my life, everything I do from acting from that picture has a far greater probability of resulting in problems, compound problems, pain and suffering, frustration, sadness, anger, than it does resolution. So step one, stay tuned in and build and strengthen my ability to be aware of the earliest possible warning signs that I'm generating a negative emotion. And then, as soon as possible, step into the breath, step back from whatever I'm doing with my mind to create that negative emotion. Look at it from that bird's eye view. Look at it from that observer position. And then, if I'm lucky enough to have been exposed to some tools, actually direct my energy to applying these tools in my life. And the tools, again, could be Michael Rice's worksheet, Byron Katie's work, Ho'oponopono, the Sedona Release Method. All of these tools understand that it's an inside job and that when I live from belief, I am basically blinded charging ahead into or through a minefield. So the most important thing for me to do once I recognize that's happening, get the blinders off. Do whatever it takes to restore a sense of calm, that mental emotional state which is necessary for me to have clarity of vision. And then and only then, choose an action. When I'm operating from any kind of negative emotional state, I'm literally looking at a picture in my mind, and my mind is trying to make me believe that the picture in my mind is accurate, and I can bet my bottom dollar it's off the mark, that the picture is distorted. Michael Rice says in some of his lectures, the older lectures, when you go to a courtroom, they want the highest and best evidence. They've set up all of these rules for trying to ensure that they only allow into the court record the evidence that can be verified and is sworn to by the experts who study these things, and that can be, you can have an eyewitness, you've got multiple eyewitnesses. They're always looking for, in that court system, the highest and best evidence. But if I'm asking my mind to show me evidence that somebody else is to blame in my life, my mind will show me that evidence. Now, never mind the fact that the things my mind is showing me never actually happened in the outside world. My mind is capable of constructing the evidence. You know, one of the more powerful examples of that was the time, probably about 8 years after the divorce I didn't want. And there was an interaction where my son in his 20s decided he needed some help. He was going to travel, and he needed some help printing out a boarding pass. And so he called me and said, "Hey, can I, you know, come over and print out a boarding pass?" And I said, "Sure. I'll help you any way I can. You're my son." Well, I did not know, and they didn't tell me, that he was with his mother. And so I had gone to the bathroom and come back to my office, and my son was in the waiting room, waiting politely and appropriately, rather than, you know, going into my office and being there without me being in there. And I turned the corner to walk into my office, and here's my ex-wife sitting in the chair. And my mind showed me a picture of her sitting there with all of these negative emotions that, you know, she's sitting there like she owns the place, and she's sitting there, you know, having not even asked if she could come and not even asked if she could be in my office. And my mind showed me all of these pictures that demonstrated that that was rude and inappropriate and disrespectful, etc. I did what I could to help my son. We got the boarding pass printed. We had several glitches. Took a while. The entire time, my mind was telling me this woman shouldn't be here. She, all these problems. And I was so agitated. I had my, based on the image that my mind was showing me, I created such a powerful set of negative thoughts that were generating such intense emotion that I knew this, I felt blessed in a way that this had happened on a Tuesday early afternoon. So I knew that that night in the Tuesday support group, the Mind Shifter support group, I was going to need to do a worksheet. And if necessary, I was going to have to pull rank and hijack the group and do this my own worksheet. And so I did. We showed an hour of the video that we normally watch, and we sat around the table after a brief period for personal convenience, and we were sitting down, and I started right off with saying, I need to, you know, pull rank here, and I need to do a worksheet, because this happened, and I explained the situation, and we laid out the worksheet, and what happened in the first step, what happened in the second step, what my mind was doing in the third step, what my mind told me had to happen in order for this to get resolved. And as soon as I specified the goal, I flashed on an image. My goal was something like I wanted my ex-wife to respect my property and respect me and talk about the important things in our relationship. Because there were, like, you know, 8 or 9 years after the divorce that I didn't want. And she had never once explained to me why one day she just out of nowhere said to me, "I don't want to be married. I never loved you." So here we are, like 8 years later, there'd never been any meeting of the minds, no apologies, no. And so my mind was saying, that's what we need to talk about. But she's talking about everything else but. And as soon as I formulated that goal, that I wanted her to talk to me about what's important and respect me, my mind showed me this image of one of the first times that I'd ever been alone with my new father-in-law. And the interaction between my father-in-law and I on that, you know, 3 or 4 hours of being alone that day flashed into my mind all those years later, you know, 20-some years later, after we'd already been divorced, and it showed me, it shattered all of that interpretation and all the pictures that I had in my mind of what had happened earlier in the day. And it showed me in no uncertain terms that the goal I was holding for my ex-wife was something that she was completely incapable of achieving. That no one in her family would ever be able to do that. She wasn't raised that way. They didn't talk about emotions. They didn't confront things directly. And so she was raised in a family that had a basic response pattern of avoidance. So she had no way. She had no skill set. She had no life experience. She had no role models for having difficult conversations about emotions and respectfully and working them out. And what flashed into my head was, along with all the tears that were coming up, what flashed into my head was, oh my gosh, the goal I'm holding for my ex-wife in this worksheet is as unreasonable as expecting a kindergarten class to assemble a Titan rocket with no instructions. And in the instant that I saw that, my rage at how I interpreted her acting earlier that day, my rage fell away. And underneath it was my sadness and my hurt and my thoughts about how I was a failure, that I couldn't keep the marriage going and I couldn't keep the two-parent family there for my kids to raise them. And it came to the surface, and I just had some tears come up right there in the group. As soon as the anger pulled away or was dismantled, as soon as I saw past it, here was the sadness. Here was the sense of failure. And I knew instantly, oh, so this is what I was avoiding by creating the rage. And what did I have to do to create the rage? I had to look at the picture of these events that happened in my office and interpret them as she's being disrespectful and she's being rude and she's refusing to talk about the important things, etc. So my mind showed me the evidence about how she's wrong and I'm right and it was settled and there's no arguing. The problem with that was that the picture my mind was showing me was only one of many, many possible interpretations of what was going on and what it meant. And what I've learned since then is that every time I can reliably approach my perception with the knowledge that any time I have a negative emotion active, my perception is distorted. And every bit of energy I focus on the outside world, trying to change myself, trying to change somebody else, or trying to change my circumstances, from the picture my mind is showing me when I'm angry, all of that energy is misplaced. At best, it's just wasted. And at worst, it's actually compounding the pain, the fear, the sadness, the stuck points. I must be willing to practice monitoring my own emotional state and get better and better at catching the earliest possible warning signs of tension, fear, or sadness. Alternatively, I might take this whopping leap of including people in my inner circle and expanding it gently and gradually to people who are trustworthy and give them permission to give me feedback. And then treat their feedback as being every bit as valid as my own insights. An example of that would be, as of a number of weeks ago now, 5-6 weeks ago maybe, I had a video call, and there were 3 people on the call, myself and 2 other people. And one person had asked me a question. Person number one asked me a question. And as I started to answer it, person number two interrupted and said, "Dr. Tim, can you do a check-in and take a look at whether or not you're triggered or you've got a lot of emotions around this? Because I'm hearing in your voice." And what I've done with that person and some others in my life is I've put this mantle of authority on them, that they have the authority, they have the permission from me to give me feedback in situations like that, even if they're interrupting me. And I will treat it as a valid point that's got a perspective that I might benefit from. And so I took a breath and I scanned my body and I realized, yes, I have a lot of emotion around this. And I explained to them both what that might be. And then we were able to move on. If I'm not able to do that, that emotion at a fevered pitch would keep growing, especially if I wasn't getting the response from the other people that I thought I should. And as that emotional intensity grows, it can only disrupt perception and take my perception farther and farther, I guess the right word there would be, further and further away from an accurate picture. This is the fundamental first step in this work. We have each been given an infallible guidance system. We have not been given the instruction manual on that guidance system. We have literally been given a counterfeit manual that tells us to misinterpret the signals from our guidance system and to use them in a way that's detrimental to us and those around us. So the core of this work is built on the realization. This is why in Diedrich Wolzak's work, the very first step in his work is that I admit that I'm upset. Think about that. Diedrich has realized in his 70-plus years of living that the first and most important thing for us as humans, because of the way our culture is and we've been trained or brainwashed or indoctrinated, is that we minimize our upset and or we blame other people. And so the first step in Diedrich's work is, I'm not going to sweep this under the carpet. So on that video call, I could have said, you know, I could have taken a breath and calmed down and said, oh, no, I'm fine. But I know better. I know that's not going to be useful. And I know for some of these people in my life where I have given them permission to give me feedback like that, I know that they're not the wounded ones who are going to keep attacking me and blaming me for their upset. So I'm selective about who I allow to give me that kind of feedback. But when that happens, I know that's valid input. And if I refuse to use it, I have less and less chance of perceiving accurately. But the better I can get at stepping into the early recognition that there's an upset triggered in me, then the better my picture gets, the clearer my picture gets about what's actually going on in the world. Clearer picture, better evidence, better results when I choose to make a comment, take an action, or hold back from an action that I might be feeling, you know, a sense of urgency to act in a situation because the picture in my mind is showing me that this is urgent and this is dangerous. And when most of the time, the situations I encounter do not require urgent action from me, especially when there's a strong negative emotion present in me. I had somebody recently who, you know, asked for some advice, and she said, well, here's the situation. And we had an agreement with this person, and we've had that agreement for a couple months, and the deadline for it to be, you know, enacted is, you know, 2 months from now. And now this person sends me a note and says, oh, my plans have changed. I want to stick around for another 8 months. And so the person who got that request to change the plans again, contacted me and said, it quite agitated, quite, you know, emotions up, what should I do? How do I respond to this? And my answer was, take a few breaths. Notice what energies are up for you. Maybe do some EFT tapping in a worksheet. And understand, you're not under any sense of urgency to respond every time somebody sends you a message or a request. So the first thing I would do is recommend you calm down, you give yourself some space, if a long walk would help, if some EFT tapping would help, if soaking in the tub would help, if reading some more of your, you know, really entertaining novel would help, do some of that. Calm yourself down. Demonstrate to yourself that this does not require an urgent, emergent response. And then, whenever you're ready, if you have already, from your self-soothing, gotten a clearer picture and you know what answer you want to give, you can give that answer. Or you could send a response that says, thank you for asking. I will take that under consideration. So you're not giving an answer right now. Somebody else's sense of urgency doesn't automatically mean you have a crisis that you have to respond to. And we can do that so many times in so many different situations in our lives. And it is so much more beneficial than that rush to judgment or that acting from the panic state. And it begins with that first step of recognizing, I need to practice being more aware of what my internal emotional state is moment to moment in my life. And the better I get at identifying that, the sooner I can step in with an intervention whenever it goes negative. I can use my favorite tools. I can call a timeout. I can just do some breathing. And what I've seen numerous times through the use of the reality management worksheet and some of these other tools is the shift in my perception that happens when I dismantle the negative emotions is beyond words. And then after about 10 years, maybe only 7 or 8 years in this work, It dawned on me that, you know what, I'm spending a lot less time in my life in the negative emotional states. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things I told people. The results I'm getting, how are these tools working for you? I used to say, well, the first thing is I spend the tiniest fraction of my life in the negative emotional states the more I practice these tools. And so that's, you know, that's powerful right there. And then what I learned after about 6-7 years of this and my negative emotional states were getting less and less, less intense and less often and shorter duration, then I started to realize, you know what, I check in and I think I'm doing fine, but I keep thinking about that situation that happened yesterday or 3 days ago. And what I learned is, even if I'm thinking about it after the fact, recurring thoughts, and I check in and my emotions say, yeah, you're calm, you're fine, you're not upset, everything's good, I better start doing worksheets on it. If I really want to move forward, my continued thought pattern coming back to that situation is every bit as much as a signal that I'm stuck or that I'm distorted in my perception as the negative emotional states. So at that first level, I need to learn to recognize the negative emotional states if I want to move forward and then get into the practice of intervening for myself sooner and sooner. At the next level, I want to recognize even if I check in and my emotions seem calm, but I keep thinking about it after the fact, I'm not calm. At a core level, there's work for me to do. There will be upset that I can dismantle. And the upset can distort my perception even if it's not conscious. That's one of the powerful lessons I've learned in the past few years is that, you know, my upset doesn't need to be conscious in order to distort my perception. Because my upset can be such that I go unconscious, that I go, Michael Rice uses the term blotto. I go blank. And I had one of those situations. I had a serious relationship, and everything is going fine for the first few years. And then there was this interaction that just kept getting more frustrating. And I was calm, but the woman involved was getting more and more agitated. And I would stay calm and hold, you know, send loving thoughts and support her in doing tapping or breathing or worksheets, and I would do some of my own. But my emotional response was very calm. And oddly enough, the more calm I stayed when she would get agitated, the more agitated she would become. And there was never any articulate representation from her of what the problem was. And then one evening, after an exceptionally intense response from her, I dropped her off at home, and then I'd gotten home, and she was saying some of the really, you know, hurtful, nasty things because she was so triggered. And eventually I got triggered to upset, so I started doing some worksheets. And I had a stack of worksheets with me, and I did one worksheet. And in the middle of it, I felt like I was falling asleep. And it wasn't that late at night, but it felt like I was being drugged. So I checked the clock and realized, no, I didn't fall asleep. It's, you know, only a minute or two since the last time. And so I shook it off, and I reread the whole worksheet and started at the top and did it. And again, through that worksheet and three or four others, I felt like I was falling asleep. So at the end, when I would cancel the goal and I would check in with how I'm feeling, I'd be blank. So I just wrote in, I feel blank, or I feel tired, or I feel, you know, like I went unconscious. And when I read that I wrote that I feel like I went unconscious, a light bulb went off. And then I felt even more tired. So I did about five or six worksheets that night, and they didn't seem to go anywhere. I didn't get any insight, except that I had that in the last one. I felt like, wow, it's almost like I'm going unconscious. So I went to bed. I woke up the next morning, and my experience was, as I thought about this relationship issue and the difficulty with this woman friend of mine, I had the thought, well, that's not a problem. We can solve that. And I had no idea how. I don't know what the shift was. But instead of feeling stuck and this is completely intractable and this will never get resolved and I don't even know what she's upset about, I had this weird, well, that's easy enough solved. We can get through that. With no details, with no logical understanding of why I felt that way, doing some more worksheets that morning because I was feeling calm emotionally for most of it, but I kept thinking about it as an intractable problem. I don't know why she's upset. I don't know what we can do. And eventually that morning, as I was doing some more worksheets, after I did a worksheet, I had this powerful realization that I had gone unconscious, not the night before that I was doing the worksheets, but 10 days earlier. And there had been an interaction between me and my younger son at the time, who was in his 20s, and this woman, and my son had said something that I knew would be triggering for my woman friend, and it was late at night, and some part of my mind said, that's not something you need to talk about now. So I didn't say anything. Come to find out, all those days later when I did this other worksheet, my mind finally offered up to me, this is the issue you have not been willing to talk about. And this is what's driving the upset in the relationship. And I could see it clearly for the first time in 10 days. But for that 10 days, I was feeling calm. I was feeling, every time I would check in with my emotions, I would feel centered. And I would tell myself, well, this isn't my issue. I should just support her in doing her work. The key is I just kept thinking about it. And now I understand in my life that if I have an issue, even if when I think about it, I come up calm and I say I'm not affected and I'm not upset, I feel relaxed. But if I keep thinking about it, I'm going to be better off if I start doing worksheets about it, exploring what is probably going to be a hidden, therefore some people might call it an unconscious, series of dynamics within me. And this tool will work. This reality management worksheet will work even when I'm not aware of what the emotion is or what the upset is. I just need to be willing to cycle through the process until the shift happens, until one of the ways I've come to think of it is that I demonstrate by my willingness to do these worksheets, I take an action that demonstrates to that fearful part of my mind that I'm actually willing and able to see and feel and process whatever it is that's hidden in that fearful part of my mind. So even if I don't have intense emotions, but I keep thinking about something over and over again, I want to be willing to start doing worksheets on it. I want to trust the process. I want to understand that the presence of continued thoughts about something is every bit as much a warning sign as having a strong negative emotion. It's every bit as much of an alarm signal in my mind that something about my mental emotional processing is off the mark. So there's your monologue for today. We're down to about 5 minutes. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And we've got a few minutes for a comment, a question, an answer, a soliloquy, a suggested topic for next week. This is a Friday. So we have a whole series of shows coming up again next week. Susan, are you there?
I am here. And Dr. Tim, that was so needed and such a good monologue. You've got your finger right on, I'm sure it's an issue for many of us, but being right, being given permission to take the time, stay with it, maybe be calm, but stay with it, it's great. I did a worksheet this morning, and I had some insights, but am still triggered, and I can't talk about it on the radio show, except to say it has to do with being right. Just being right about a certain issue. I don't know how to talk about it on the radio show because it's just too divisive even to talk on the radio show. So,
well, but that's enough, right? If I have this idea that if I have any kind of tension or upset, or if I'm even, I just keep thinking about it over and over again, and my mind is telling me I'm not upset, but at the root of it, I'm thinking I'm right and the other person's wrong, I can benefit from doing worksheets on that.
Yeah. It's going to take quite a few, I think. And certain memories do come up, but and they're probably relevant, but I'm just so not there right now. So it was great to hear you talk, the whole talk. So.
Well, I'm glad you found it useful.
Yeah, it was good.
Any big weekend plans for relaxing? Being gentle with yourself?
Well, we have considering going to Michael's retreat with the Still Point, but it's a yard site, year's mind, for my for Tim Bingham's mother, who was very, very big in our lives, very dear person. It's been 14 years, and the family is getting together on a Zoom call in the middle of, at 2 o'clock tomorrow, to just reminisce and remember her. And one of us said she didn't want to be on the call because she is struggling to forgive her mother, it's Tim's sister, struggling to forgive her mother for the way her mother treated her at her mother's, the end of her life. Her mother took a lot, got very hostile toward the end of her life, as sometimes happens, and the daughter was the lightning rod for it. And we witnessed this, ran interference as best we could, but the daughter is still in some pain 14 years later, and I'm thinking, oh, the worksheet would be great, but I'm not sure I could even introduce. We're just going to talk and see what happens. I don't feel as if offering to do a worksheet would be appropriate. Maybe personally, just maybe the two of us on sometime on the phone, but I've been thinking about that. Anyway, that's the plan for tomorrow, and then there's a couple of other things going on, and it's been a very busy time. Still summer, one grandson quite sick with what looks like COVID, but he's tested negative twice and has been sick for 9 days, terribly tired, cough, sore throat, no fever, gastric problems, and so I've been kind of running up and down with nurse maybe type of things going on for him. It's not Charlie, it's his older brother. Anyway, thanks for asking. So a lot going on. How about you?
Well, I'm hoping to get, you know, a restful weekend in and do what I encourage so many people to do, which is self-care at some level. I have a blessedly busy schedule these days in my work, and I do whatever I can to balance that with good self-care.
Good.
So I thank you for the call and the questions, and I support you in applying those worksheets and doing good self-care this weekend, and we'll look forward to hearing from you next week.
Okay, Dr. Tim. Yeah. Thanks.
All right.
You
blessings.
Have a good weekend, too.
I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice. Whenever you're unmuted. There you
okay,
go.
Okay, so very good. Thank you. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too, and have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, August the 20th, 2021. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. I'll invite you once again to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. And you can either scroll down to the events section, or you can go down to the news section, and you'll see Mindshifters and Stillpoint Breathing. That starts tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern time, and then tomorrow starts at 10 o'clock a.m. Tonight will probably go about 2 hours, depending on processing. And tomorrow will probably end, again, depending on processing, somewhere 4, 5, 6 o'clock. And pre-registration is required. It's $125 for the 2 days. Those who participated in the online intensives have been invited to come in free. And if you choose to donate, that would be awesome support. But I need to know sooner than later because it's already 1 o'clock here, so we've got about 6 hours. And so if you're going to register, I need to know that you want on so that I can send you the Zoom links and we can set up registration. So that being said, let's welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. honored and delighted that you're here to engage in this conversation one more time, or, you know, maybe it isn't one more time. It's been an ongoing thing for a long time, and so we're honored that you're here, and we hold the space for questions. You know, there's an interesting story about Albert Einstein, and he was asked if he were given a problem to solve, given 1 hour in which to solve it, and if it wasn't solved within an hour, he would die, what would he do? He said, I'd take 55 minutes of that hour to determine what the question was, and then in the last 5 minutes, I'd solve the problem. And so the reason we keep inviting questions, questions, you know, our minds can only go in so many places and come up with so many questions. And when those questions come, then we can move into, within the framework of the principles of how the universe works, to answer those questions and create support. But you've been in places we haven't been, so we don't know where your mind might lead us with your questions. So your questions are important. We invite you to keep a notebook that you keep in your phone. You know, there are lots of notebook applications for smartphones these days. You can easily keep notes of questions, things that come up as you're doing worksheets or working through issues, that, you know, using any of the tools. And of course, if you're not using the forgiveness process, then we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says Start Here. That Start Here link will walk you through the whole process of forgiveness, up to and including, I think we're over 20 shows now, where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself has walked someone fully and completely through the forgiveness worksheet, through that process. So there are lots of instructions for how to do it. It's a shocker to most people when they begin to learn what forgiveness is, because they've been taught the opposite of forgiveness. And so the opposite thinking has to be undone. You know, if you think that your life is going to change because you let somebody else off the hook for what they do in you, you're mistaken. That's not forgiveness. That can lead to an opening, can lead to change. Nice thing to do, to pardon somebody. But if you call pardoning the act of letting somebody else off the hook for what's going on inside of you, you've done nothing to change what's moving inside of you. When you call that act of letting others off the hook what it is, pardoning, then you realize, and I had pain generated, I had trauma generated, I had something going on inside of me, which I realize I need to deal with. I'd like to remove that from my structure. I think I'll do some forgiveness work. So now, having pardoned another and accrued the benefits of that, then moving into, what is it in me that I need to remove? When you think of forgiveness, think removal. And now you've got a much more accurate picture of what forgiveness actually is. So if your tissue structure is burdened, if there's pain, pain is a signal that there's an energy being held in tissue that doesn't belong there. Forgiveness is about removing those energetic patterns that don't belong within our structure. You know, it's interesting. If you go to the opening words in the book of John in the ancient Aramaic, you hear them saying, and, you know, that book has been made to sound like it's something about religion, and it's not. It's about physics. Those opening words do not say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. What it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And when you engage in a thought, that thought they're showing now in the cell biologist laboratory literally becomes a molecule within your structure. The non-physical becoming what we call physical. So the thought becomes a neuropeptide. The neuropeptide circulates around in your structure till it finds a cell with the receptor site that matches. It lands on that cell and literally inserts itself in the cell. And so when you insert a neuropeptide into a cell, it shows up in the cell as what we call chemistry. And so if you want to alter the chemistry of your cells from their norm, where the cell is designed to function from love, just think hate thoughts of hate and fear and sadness and grief and loss and rage, and all of those energetic patterns will become so-called chemicals in your cells. And those energetic patterns that come from hostility or fear are disintegrative qualities of so-called chemistry. And so if I apply forgiveness, I begin to literally reach into that energetic pattern that I've placed in the cell previously that's producing my pain or my trauma, and I remove it from the cell. Again, removal is called forgiveness. And so we're here to support literally every mind, heart, and being on the planet, becoming aware that we are creative beings. And the so-called chemistry that moves in our cells and in our structure is by and large a product of our own thinking, interacting with generations and generations and generations of what generally tends to be similar thinking. You know, there's an old saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. What does that mean? Well, if dad and mom thought in degraded, hostile, destructive terms, son and daughter are probably going to tend to move in the same direction. If you recognize, if you look at your history, you look at your bloodline, and you say, where is the person in my bloodline that always showed up connected to love, no matter what anybody did, what happened? If you've got one, you're blessed if you've got one person you can point to in your bloodline. Got two, three, four, five? Wow, you are really blessed. In a world where in the last 75 years in war, we've murdered over 175 million people. When you think about that, million with an M, 175 million. What kind of patterns are there in people's minds that this sort of pained behavior becomes acceptable or even normal? And if you choose to become an early adopter that says, okay, I'm going to stop functioning out of hostility or fear, period. And I'm going to do the work that it requires to be restored to the truth of who I am as love, then you've got your work cut out for you. And we're here to support you in that process. We're here to provide the specific exact tools for doing that work. And the core tool, now we've identified 30 plus tools that we teach, but the core tool is that of forgiveness. The removal of the patterns, the thought patterns, the so-called chemical patterns in our cells that never belonged. And so that's what we're here to do. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the process. And I'm going to go to our reading today. We've been reading from the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Since the beginning of the year. And we're now up to page 102. So if you've been following us, we're going to go to page 102. And why is this happening to me again? Read just a couple of paragraphs. We're working our way through the book as a project this year, the beginning of each daily show. And here we are in the chapter on the body has a mind of its own, and speaking about resonance being the key to how the mind works. So when a word is spoken, all information of a similar frequency to that word will tend to move in any mind that hears that word. And I used the example earlier of, you know, I've got a middle C tuning fork. I hit it on a desk. I put it near a second middle C tuning fork. And what happens to the second tuning fork? Through the law of resonance, there's an energy exchange, and that second tuning fork starts to vibrate. What happens if I put a vibrating middle C tuning fork near a middle A tuning fork? Nothing. There's no resonance. If somebody comes along in their hostility or fear, and you go into hostility or fear, and you say, oh, look at them, they're a middle C tuning fork, look how terrible they are, and your response is hostility or fear, guess whose tuning fork you're feeling the effect of? The mind works by resonance. That's the law that governs all energy movement. And so it's easy to make up a picture world, can rationalize and judge and blame everybody else for what's going on inside of us. But sooner or later, one has to wake up and realize that what's moving in them is in them. So our words resonate all information of similar frequencies in the mind that hears them. And I offer to Richard the thought that I call this the Fowler effect. Let's lay out that idea. All information that relates to any particular topic is stored in a quote-unquote file, so to speak, with like information. When you fire one set of brain cells in a file, it sets up an energy field that tends to cause every other brain cell in that file to fire. In my workshops, I demonstrate the file folder effect by asking the audience to answer a question and shout out that answer loud enough to be heard when I ask. And I ask, and this is kind of becoming an outdated example because young people don't know who this is. But if you've been around for a while, this one will work for you. So in the workshop, I'll ask the question, what's the Lone Ranger's horse's name? And having asked that hundreds and hundreds of times throughout the audience, I usually hear Silver, which is the horse's name. People also answer Tonto, which, if you remember, was the Lone Ranger's sidekick, Native American sidekick. And they also answer Trigger, which, if you remember, was Roy Rogers' horse's name. Now, take a look at that from the perspective of resonance. With that question, what's the Lone Ranger's horse's name? I resonated the file in people's minds on old Westerns. Now, the way most people answer life is whatever's sitting on top of that file and pops through, governed by the law of resonance first, becomes their answer to whatever is going on in their lives. So if Tonto was sitting at the top of the file, then, you know, the person asked, what's the Lone Ranger's horse's name? Says Silver was there, if Trigger was there. So we've resonated the file on old Westerns. And the mind is governed by that law. And you'll notice that, you know, you may have done behaviors that you say to yourself, and I want to stop. I never want to do that again. But you'll notice that every time a matching frequency shows up, it happens again because it's there. And forgiveness is the tool and the mechanism by which you remove those things. So Richard replies to me in response to my explanation of the Lone Ranger's horse's name. I can see the audience responding in that way, Michael, but I don't understand what that has to do with resonance. When I asked the horse's name, each mind's file on old Westerns resonated as a result of the vibration set up by my voice. Every mind delivers its internal reality, which is dependent not on my words, but on what my words resonate in each person's mind in the audience. The same words are heard by every person, but the reality triggered is totally dependent on the content of each mind, on what is stored in brain cells, and which answer is closest to the surface in the resonated file. There's an interesting passage in the Book of Thomas, one of the books that didn't get canonized, and the Pharisees are kind of all over Yeshua, and the disciples turn to him and, you know, why don't you sock it to him? Why don't you give him back some of their own medicine? And his response is, I have none of that in my store. You're not going to be feeding out hostility or fear to people unless you have that in your store. And if you do, remember that by feeding it out to someone else, you get the original and they get the carbon copy. And we're here to put an end to those patterns. So it depends what's in brain cells. And then I offer Richard the thought, the reality perceived always comes from the content of the listening mind, just like the meanings we give to life. So we're inviting everyone to recognize that each of our minds is governed by this law of resonance, law of energy exchange. Basically, that law of energy exchange says is that when the atomic magnetic structure of two substances is the same or similar, and one of those energetic patterns fires off, it will cause the same patterns in every other mind to also fire. So if you find your mind firing up with hostility in response to what someone does, you know, let's say, you know, an example, I asked somebody, well, what was your goal? You know, when you went into all that hostility, what was it that you wanted from them? And you'll notice you're never upset with people until they start failing to accomplish the goals you have for them. I mean, unless you're just a generally miserable person, you're pretty happy with most everybody when they're fulfilling your goals. But you'll notice when someone doesn't fulfill a goal, that's when hostility or fear comes up. And so if someone does a behavior that resonates hostility or fear in you, they are not the cause of that hostility or fear. They're simply a reflection of the hostility or fear. And that reflection is your opportunity to remove the disintegrative energy of hostility or fear from your structure. And ultimately, that's what this work is about, because where we put these dis-ease energies, they ultimately become what we call physical diseases. Wherever a disintegrative energy is resident and resonates, the tissue that it's stored in is going to respond with a big ouch. Pain is simply a signal that tells us there's an energy in the structure that doesn't belong there. Now, you'll notice most everybody lives in a world of denial. What's our definition of denial? Whenever I think or speak, as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. Whenever I think or speak, what does that look like? You made me mad. Well, excuse me, nobody. I mean, absolutely nobody has ever made you mad. Now, I hear people respond, oh, Michael, I've got a list for you. I could tell you all the people who've ever made me mad. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Nobody has ever made you mad. But if there's mad in there, oh, a whole procession of people is going to show up that will seem to have the capacity to make you mad. And all they need to do to quote unquote make you mad is resonate your hostility, violate a goal that you hold for them that has hostility attached. So let's say I want someone to treat me. Let's go back to the commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. I want somebody to treat me lovingly, gently, and with respect, and they just yelled at me. And I go into a fit of rage. What have I just informed myself of? I've just told myself that in the file on my mind on being treated lovingly, gently, and with respect, there's rage. And my job, drop into the parts of my mind that hold that disintegrative disease-causing energy called rage, and remove it. And forgiveness is the removal process. So again, you can go to whyagain.org. You can do the worksheet process right there. Go to the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. It says start here. Click that button, and you'll be walked through a whole series of links on how to literally remove every form of hostility or fear from your structure. And then as you utilize those tools, questions will likely arise because we're going to be reversing a lot of what the world has told you all your life. They made you mad. They made you sad. They hurt you. They disturbed you. They upset you. It's all a fraud. It's all a lie. You'll notice if you've been through that particular state of disturbance or upset 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. It's about you. It's not about them. And once you realize that, then you have the opportunity to reach inside yourself, to utilize that first century Aramaic technology to collapse the lies your mind tells you about how everybody else is the problem in your life. Reach into the level of your mind, and now I'm talking about the neuropeptide level, where you extract from the cell the thought that produced the disintegrative chemistry, and I put chemistry in quotes there, in the cell. You extract that thought, you learn to decode it, and you throw it away. So that's what we're here to support, and that's what we're here to understand. And we're honored and delighted that you are part of the process and part of the conversation. And we've got lots of time for conversation. It's about 20 past one. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, the call-in number for the show is 563-999-3581. And when you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you're listening and you have a question or a comment and you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have any hands up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
We do have a hand up, and I believe it's Miss Judy. Area code 417, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon, everybody.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. Good to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Nice.
I had something that happened the other day, day before yesterday. Actually, it was yesterday. And and when this happened, I had a gut feeling that wasn't very nice. And
right.
I noticed, I worked through it with worksheets, and I started feeling pretty good about the situation because I got to see it from different points of view. And
right.
And then I realized I was listening to Dr. Tim this morning, and he was talking about the very same thing, but on a different subject. It was the same subject, just a different story. And he was saying that even though you feel like that there is nothing, that you've done everything and there's nothing left, and you keep going back and thinking about it, you have a lot of work to do. That if it's still crossing your mind, you still have work to do, even though the feelings aren't associated with it. And it's an opportunity to dig deeper.
Yeah, and my thought would be, even though the feelings are not yet in awareness, they're there, and that's what's prompting. I'd be in full agreement with Dr. Tim. That's what's prompting you to keep thinking about that. Oh, there's still another piece of work to do around that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, these were two different situations. One was my granddaughter. I had wanted to see the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, but she is a surgical nurse and her hours are varied and it's really hard for her to get away. And so I was saying, well, when you come over to where I am, you know, we can go do this, and this. And she says, I'm going to be busy for the next month. And to me, that was a put off. And I had that feeling, that gut feeling, and it just like something dropped, you know? And then when I was
right.
at the store the other day, I was going to pick up a really quick lunch.
Tell you what,
and
I've been saying, before we go
yeah.
on to that other story, let's just stay with that one of what that feeling was in your gut. Have you ever had that feeling in your gut before?
Probably. I can't associate it with anything. Well, whenever I got bad news about somebody, I had that feeling.
So were you receiving the what you consider to be a put off by your daughter as bad news?
My granddaughter. Yeah, I did.
Your granddaughter?
Yeah.
So it sounds like maybe some worksheets around getting bad news would be a good place to do a number of worksheets, and that will probably give you the opportunity to remove that disintegrative energy from your gut.
Okay.
Which will probably upgrade your life, right?
Yes. I'm always for that. Well, let me share with you the second one. It was just so simple,
yep.
And it was really not even called for to have a feeling like that. But when I was standing in line, I was behind several people, and when it come my turn, I'm standing there, and the young lady is replenishing some of the food on the shelf where the food is, and she's just taking her sweet time and just piddling around. And I'm patiently waiting, you know, and then somebody walks up behind me. The other girl walks over the cash register, which is off to my right, and talks to the girl. And she says, "What can I get you for lunch?" And it's like she just totally disregarded me standing there. I'd been standing there probably about 20 minutes altogether. And it was like it went straight, you know, to my tummy, that little heavy feeling that dropped.
Right.
And
yeah.
So... I just left, and I thought.
Sounds like the same issue.
Myself, huh?
Sounds
what?
Like the same issue is with your granddaughter. She's
being
ignoring
disregarded.
You.
Disregarded.
Yeah,
yeah.
Being disregarded.
Yeah.
Like I don't count.
Right. Yeah. Right.
How does that thought "I don't count" look like your life?
Well, being raised in a very large family, being the oldest of 12 children by my mother, and then my father had four more, like 9 months later, she had my little sister. So, yeah. And that's the way it was. And then there would come another one, and then another one, and another one. And then I was left with taking care of everybody, so... because she had to work a lot. Disregarded, yeah, ignored.
So it sounds like maybe doing some worksheets around being a child and not feeling important, not feeling cared for, nurtured, like you count, would probably clean out. You know, it sounds like probably on a tissue level, you got this pained energy in your gut pretty early in your life.
Yeah. I can remember hiding under the bed one time just to see if anybody would miss me.
And what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts as you were hiding under the bed?
I was just going to wait there until somebody missed me.
Did they miss you?
Yeah, after a while, yeah. I wasn't there very long.
But it was a test for them, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, well,
maybe it's time to let go of the need to test people.
Right.
And how do you do it treating yourself like you're important?
Well, since all the children are grown and gone, I'm a caretaker by heart, you know, just naturally raised that way. I'm learning to take care of myself.
Oh, good for you.
And I'm finding that, you know, I'm expending the same amount of energy I expended when all the children were at home, only it's on me now. So,
right.
And then anyone in the neighborhood that might need my help, or I'm available. So basically, yeah, learning to take care of myself. Take the responsibility for. Okay, hold on.
How about a mind
here.
Shifter?
I would love one. I got a pen and a paper. Just let me reach it. Okay.
Everyone in my life has always responded to me as though I am the most important person in existence.
You're really calling it out, aren't you?
Well, you know, that's the idea of a mind shifter. So what does that bring up for you? What does that do to your breath? Are you breathing?
Yeah. Well, I have to pay attention to that.
So it's a good one, good breath. That's what you want. So I support you taking a time period of several hours with that mind shifter and just letting yourself, you know, just do a brain dump and let every time that that wasn't true come to the surface, dump it out on the page. And then once you've got that list completed, I'm talking about spending 3 or 4 hours, then go back and look at where are the places that you need to do worksheets, where are the places that perhaps some communication is appropriate, and clean it up.
Speaking of communication being appropriate, after I did like several worksheets on the little restaurant there, I was thinking about going back today and ordering the same meal that I was going to order yesterday. And I thought, am I supposed to communicate with them how they treated me yesterday? And my thought was, if they bring it up, I might ask them if they're interested to know how I felt, and then share that with them. But I didn't think bringing it up would be in advantageous.
Well, follow your guidance. Maybe if someone's treating customers in a way that's inappropriate, management would like to know it.
Well, I'll just see how it goes. I'll do my worksheet, and then maybe tomorrow or the next day I'll go.
Well, we'll hold the space.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the space you hold.
Hey,
and,
you've got it, young lady.
Appreciate y'all. Okay. Toodaloo and Fruit Loops and Cheerios and all that stuff.
All right. Take care. Love and blessings.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Miss Jeannie. Do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet.
Well, then it's time for somebody to make some noise.
While I'm waiting for a hand to go up, I'll just share something that I did some work on this morning.
Oh, please, sweetie.
Because to my OCD or OCB or whatever you want to call it. But whenever I give information, I offer lots of information. I mean, like, probably more than someone needs to know, and give out all kinds of, you know, you do this, you do that, and here you go, and this is what you need to know. And then people still come back and start doing the what, when, where, how, and which means they didn't really read what I sent to them. And I got really triggered. And so I did some work around it. And what I realized, what came up, was that when I was growing up, Mom would never answer a question. Like if I ask, you know, what's this or how's that or whatever, she'd say, go look it up. Well, back then, of course, we didn't have Google and we didn't have computers. We had dictionaries and encyclopedias. And so I'd have to go and actually physically do some searching and all to find the answers. And that was kind of frustrating. It was like, why can't you just tell me? But anyway, then when I got my, you know, I had several jobs. Yeah, really. I had several jobs, like starting out as a waitress, and I moved up to being assistant manager and all that. But when I got out of there and I got my first, you know, really good job, not just some little minor jobs that I did, it was at the pharmaceutical company. And I was originally hired in as one position. But then within just a matter of weeks, they asked me if I could also take on the accounting of the department in addition to the job that I was hired for. And I agreed to do that. And after I agreed to do it, I found out they were doing all of their accounting manually on paper and then hand-walking it over to another building and up 4 flights of steps and all this other. So I requested a computer. I said, you know, we can do it electronically, and then I can just send it to the accounting department. They'll have it immediately. And so they said, okay. So they gave me a computer, but there were it was a totally different operating system than what I was used to. So I asked them if there was any way I could take a course to get familiar with that system. And they handed me, it was like 3 or 4 inches thick, a tutorial, and told me to look it up and figure it out myself.
Learn it.
So it's like, and so out of frustration and irritation, I actually went about proving that I could do it. And I taught myself, and I did a really good job. And, you know, but there's a part of me that then when I offer all the information a person could possibly need and more, and then they start asking me questions, part of me wants to say, go look up the information I've already sent you. But I don't. I go ahead and answer their questions. But it definitely is a trigger.
Yeah. So do you see the power person dynamic there?
Yeah, that's what I said. There's part of me that wants to tell them to go look it up because that's what she always did to me. But I don't. I go ahead and answer their questions and give them more information again. And but, yes, there's still frustration. So that dynamic is underlying even though I'm not externalizing it.
But the piece that I think you might be missing is that you don't want to answer their question, which is exactly what
but I
happened
do.
With Mom.
Which my mom wouldn't.
You do. Right. But what I'm offering is the power person dynamic is a little more subtle. And that is, you know, well, you're going to go ahead and answer it anyway because that's what you do. But at the same time, remember the behavior of the power person when under stress, ultra stress, I'm going to do what my power person did to me that I hated the most. And you hate it.
Right. That's what I said. There's still part of me that wants to do that.
Doesn't want to answer the question. There's your worksheet work. That's really nice piece of work. That's really ferreting out some subtle but powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Can I add another piece to the puzzle?
Sure.
So one of the things I've noticed is that you virtually never answer the question that's asked. You reach, and I don't know if this was what Mom did when she, you know, said go look it up, whether it was, you know, what the dynamic was there, but somehow it ties in. But you almost always answer a different question. And it's interesting. It's the first time I've heard you say that Mom would never answer. I do remember you before talking about, you know, you had to go look things up, but just that Mom, just that clearly stated that Mom would never answer a question.
Yeah.
Are you breathing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Nice piece of work.
Okay.
So what's happening right now?
Nothing. I was just taking notes and looking up another phone number that just popped up on the switchboard, and so kind of multitasking.
Cool.
It's kind of hard to be fully in process and run switchboard too. So.
Sure, I hear that. Your skill level is amazing. Your OCB is awesome. For those who don't know what OCB is, Jeannie has in the past self-diagnosed as obsessive compulsive disorder, and mind shifter for her is it no, Jeannie, it's your obsessive compulsive blessing. Because it really does usually serve you. And so when that frustration comes up, I hold the space for it to be softened and let loose.
Thank you.
And I'm breathing with you.
And we did have a hand just go up.
Oh, sweet. Let's say hello.
Miss Roma, 808, you're on the air.
Aloha.
Hi, you too. Aloha.
Welcome.
Right in the middle of crying.
What's happening for you, young lady? Say again. You're not sure whether to laugh or cry, eh?
I'm scared.
What's bringing up the fear?
My sister.
What happened? Take a breath. What's happening with your sister?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that we were doing well. But she had a pattern of setting traps for me. And it's beginning to look like she... Oh, God.
Please get conscious.
I'm
You're
feeling
safe.
Like I'm in a trap.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it sounds like this trap is a wonderful place for you to be because it is giving you a chance to look at all this unresolved grief that it's time to let go of.
Grief and fear.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it that you wanted from her?
I just wanted good old-fashioned love, you know, sisterly love and trust. Just that's all I wanted.
So it sounds like a lot of unresolved pain around trust, the ability to trust.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's my whole life she's been attacking me. And there was a period of time where the last communication was, I don't want to hear anything from you until it's news of your death.
I thought you guys got past that one.
Yeah, I thought we had too, about 6 months ago. I thought we were getting past it. Yeah, right.
And?
I just feel so sad.
Hmm.
Yeah, she started calling me, and I was happy to receive. About 6 months ago, she started calling me, and I was very happy to receive the calls and interact with her in a loving way. Oh, my goodness. Back in 1989, someone came into my life and spent the next 20 years in my life. And wow. That became a big problem. Yeah. Yeah, that became a big problem because this was a person who took advantage of other people if it was ever possible financially or emotionally or whatever. And when this person came into my life, that was really when the real monkey wrench was thrown into my relationship with my sister. Oh, boy. Well, at least I'm not sobbing, crying. It was so comforting to hear your wife sharing her challenge just now, because I felt the love in her voice. Oh. I've ever been in my life at any other point in my life. So I I'm glad we're about to go deeply into process with a group of people that I look forward to later on today.
You sound like you're ready to breathe. Yep.
Yeah, all right. That would be putting it mildly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Good timing, I guess. Ooh, wow. Well, I don't really want to get into my head about details regarding my sister. I'd rather stay in my heart or wherever
so
I am.
So what does
I'm
it feel like to...
my body.
So, yeah. So if you were to look at the goal you held for your sister...
Hmm.
To sounds like to treat you lovingly, gently, and respectfully.
Yes.
Yeah. So what happens when you cancel that goal? Just you know, cancel my need for my sister.
Yeah, I just did a worksheet on it, and it's my desire was number three, was maintain relationship with Joanne. Her name is Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And it sounds like there are a lot of emotional strings that keep snapping back at you.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So you ready to cut those strings?
Yeah, she was 6 years older than I, huh? What?
You ready to cut those strings?
Oh, yeah. I guess I'm afraid of being completely alone. Although, I know I'm not, you know, I have a lot of invisible support. So, what you said, am I ready to cut those strings?
Yeah.
What are the strings?
Simple.
What are they?
Well,
what are they?
The reactive emotions that you have when you just think about or speak about her.
Yeah.
Includes sadness, grief, loss, fear.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
I don't know what else is involved.
Well, that would pretty
it
much cover it.
Some rage.
I don't know about rage. Yeah. Fear, you know, I remember you used to say it was either fear or hostility. It's definitely fear. Oh. So how do we go about cutting these strings?
Well, her name is Joya.
Joanne.
Joanne.
J-O-A-N-N,
okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I wish it was Joya. That would be great. But well, I'll just change her name in my mind to Joya.
Okay, to Joya. Cool.
Yeah, good.
But
so
with
that
this,
cuts a...
this emotional release technique, let's use Joanne.
Joanne, okay.
Yeah. So first thing I want you to do, you know, what I want to do is assist you getting focused at the seat of the unconscious, the place where you can cut the emotional strings that keep these reactive tendencies going.
It's kind of in the base
and
of
so,
my torso, I guess.
Well, no, actually it's in your brain. It's in your brain.
Okay.
And so I'm going to invite you to imagine, if you close your eyes, that I have two pencils of light.
Right.
And I'm going to place one of them right down
I've
through the top center.
You want me to go to the third eye?
Well, no. Actually, what I want you to do is just hold the space and follow the instructions.
Listen. Okay.
Let's go to this place.
Okay.
So I'm going to place the two, I want you to imagine I'm going to place the two pencils of light, one right down through the top of your crown, top center of your head, and the second one I'm going to place through the center of the forehead. And imagine I'm inserting those two light beams And where they meet is where you want to focus. That's the seat of the unconscious. That's where you can let go of those attachments.
I have a question. Is it the center of the forehead or the third eye between the eyebrows?
The center of the forehead.
Okay.
And the center of the crown chakra.
Okay.
And so imagine I'm inserting these two beams of light. And let yourself focus where the two meet, and when you're there, let me know.
Okay, it's radiance.
Okay. And then staying focused in that place, allow a picture of Joanne to come to mind.
Okay.
When you're focused there and you have that picture, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, holding to that picture and staying focused in that place, I'm going to invite you to speak to Rukka. You're asking that superpower within you, that elemental force, to assist. Rukka, mm-hmm. I release all attachment to Joanne.
Did I need to say it out loud?
Go ahead. Sure, please.
Rukka. Oh, it's so nice to connect with Rukka. I release all attachment to Joanne. I feel movement up there in the skull. Hard to describe. Like a string flipping.
Mm-hmm.
Up.
Oftentimes it's kind of tingling. You might notice something happening in your hands.
Yeah, I do. They're tingling.
Okay. So that's the energy moving. It's a simple process, but I've seen it make profound, profound changes in people's lives.
Thank you.
And as you let loose of those energetic links, Joanne can do whatever she does, and there's nothing in you based in pain to resonate with it anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can just stay connected to love and be that space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you remember that key thought that when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone.
Right.
That may be the key to resonating that on a whole other level for her, so that she is able to connect through that presence of love that you are, that she is.
Thank you.
And if somebody doesn't have the brain cells and the awareness to do that, you know, the person who does have the awareness, it's up to them to make the move.
And the move is?
To stand as the space of conscious, active, present love.
Active, present love.
Whatever they're doing. You might go to the website and download the commitment. Download the commitment and print it off and write a note to her and send it to her.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that. I have a clean copy of the commitment in the card form.
Oh, perfect.
I think I'll just send that to her.
Sweet.
Thank you. Okay, very good.
You sound like a lot of trauma has left you.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. So I bless everyone on the call, and I'm deeply, deeply grateful to the work. Thank you. I'm very, very grateful for the work that you all do.
All right, young lady. We'll see you at 7 o'clock. Which you're now 6 hours behind us, aren't you? You don't do daylight savings there, correct? So you're actually six hours.
Yeah. I'll see you soon. Not too long from now. 10.
Yeah.
And what is it? 2 in the afternoon. Yeah, I think. Then the next one is really early, 4 in the morning. Let's see. I can't do arithmetic right now. Sorry.
just about 2 o'clock now.
Yeah.
Say again?
Okay.
What time is it
yeah,
there?
Yeah, so 6 hours.
Yeah, 6 hour difference. That's what I thought. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be holding the space, and we'll see you at 7 o'clock our time.
Okay.
This whole illusion of time is crazy, isn't it? All right. Blessings. Bye bye.
It's a funny thing.
I mean, it's really crazy. Think about it. You know, how can it be 2 o'clock here and only whatever time it is there, or a different time somewhere? I mean, obviously, the whole thing is a fantasy. We made it up. You know, it's one of those fantasies that works, so it's helpful.
Well, it has to do with the sun. That's all. It's just the sun.
There you go.
And the way we travel around the sun, and it's fun. I love it. I really love it. And see the sunlight going through the blossoms outside. Oh. Oh, thank you. Okay, I'll get off in case there's someone else waiting.
All right, Emily. Be blessed. Aloha.
Okay.
See you then. All right, so bye. All right.
Big
well,
shift.
Jeannie,
that was
about...
awesome.
Yeah, nice energy shift.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes, so probably not time to take another question, but direct everybody to, if they want to do the workshop tonight and tomorrow, let me know within the next couple of hours, and I'll send you the Zoom link, and we'll get you registered, and
cool.
See you then.
Sounds awesome. So if you want to let Jeannie know that you're ready to jump into the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, that starts at 7 o'clock Eastern Time tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow morning, drop her an email at jeanie@whyagain.org. Jeannie at whyagain, or pardon me, yeah, at whyagain.org. And give your phone number and, of course, your email, and we'll make sure to get a Zoom link to you, get you set up to register. And in the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.